This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views. The pure heart is one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Sorry, you can. There we go.
Thank you.
And no worries at all.
Yes. One of our group has given you a joke for today.
A joke for the group. A good joke or a bad joke? Okay, well, I'll give you a little joke to think about before I read this one out. And it's, what does Canada... Any Canadians here, by the way? Okay, what does Canada produce which no other country in the world produces? Anyway. That is not the answer. Okay, what does Canada produce that no other country in the world produces?
Maple syrup.
No? What?
Canadian?
Yes!
Canadian.
That's a stupid joke, anyway. Did you hear about the peanut walking down the street? No, I didn't. Oh, it's a punchline. He was assaulted. Okay, now a rejoinder for that. This is a ghost story. This was a fellow, I went to UK recently, and this guy went into one of these old pubs. And you know these old pubs in UK, they're just really low ceiling, 300-400 years old, and it's got a lot of history in them. But they're very popular, especially with tourists. And so this Australian went into one of these really old pubs, and no one was in there at all. Do you just the barman, the publican, just washing up a few glasses, and he just went there and said, ordered a pint of beer, and went to sit down by himself and wondered just what's going on here, why is it so empty? And then he heard someone speak to him. Nice jacket you're wearing. He looked around, there's no one there. He said, I must be just imagining this. And he had another sip of beer, and a few minutes later, nice pair of shoes too. He looked around, and there's no one there. The barman was a long way away. And then he had another sip of beer, and then a nice tie you're wearing as well. And that was it, because no one was saying that. It must have been a ghost, some sort of spirit. So he left his beer there and started running out of the pub. It's obvious that's why there's no one in there. It was a haunted pub. And so he asked the barman, stopped. He said, where are you going, sir? He said, look, I heard these saying, someone saying to me, it's a nice jacket you're wearing, a nice pair of shoes, a nice tie. There's no one there. It's a ghost. And the barman said, look, it's not a ghost, sir. It's the peanuts. They're complimentary. Okay, your turn.
Oh, that's good.
You can't. That's why I'm the spiritual dictator. Okay, anyway. Complimentary peanuts. Okay, people complain about my jokes. They say they're terrible, they're hopeless. And you know what they do? They feed them to their friends and their partners the next day. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so meditation. So first of all, meditation, it's good to keep it light-hearted. Now, life is already heavy anyway, and there's so many things to worry about and think about. And meditation is supposed to be the opposite, just getting very light and peaceful and happy as well. So this is why in meditation we learn how to relax to the max. And just even recently when I was teaching a retreat, I told everybody about this wonderful Thai word. If you don't know any Thai at all, this is one word you should remember. And it is a word, sabai. Now you can hear that sabai, but you've got to actually really mean it. Sabai. Oh yeah, that's sabai. Because sabai means relaxing. And one of the great monks, he's still alive, who actually spent a year over in Bodhinyana Monastery, Ajahn Gunha, and he was the one, we asked him, can you teach us meditation? I know what he teaches, so simple. He says, breathe in, sabai. Breathe out, sabai. And that's all. In other words, add this beautiful relaxation, peace, and happiness to what you're doing. And sometimes people look at meditation like going to the doctor or the dentist and going through all of these procedures. It's gonna hurt, but it's good for me. That is just so ridiculous. If you want to just go next door and get an injection or something, I don't know, get a procedure. But this is learning how to relax the body and relax the mind. So to be able to do that, can you sit sabai? There we go. Sometimes that you have to not just speak, but you have to act your talk. You have to live it. You have to project it by the way that you sit in front of people. And the way your robes are nice and loose. To actually project what sabai and letting go really means. So look at the way I'm sitting right now. That is a teaching for you. Yeah. Learning how... Isn't that feels really nice about this? And I remember going to this one place, a seminar, it was over in, I think, Perth Yacht Club or somewhere around there. and it was all these executives from Peppermint Grove and Dalkeith, all these snooty rich people. And you know what happened? That when I went there afterwards, one of the executives, I don't know who she was, but she came up afterwards and said, you know, you live your talk. What do you mean by that? She said, your robe kept falling off during this. And she actually went, she went to a Catholic convent. That's where she went as a school. She said, all those nuns, it's so tight. And it's not only just their clothes, but just the way they behave was also really, really tight. And these Buddhist monks are just so loose and relaxed. So there's something in that. Because to meditate, as you all know, that if you haven't heard this before, that this place, the Armadale Meditation Group, what's its nickname?
Club Med.
Club Med Armadale, yes. Now just calling it Club Med, in that it shows you that it's something which is relaxing, easy, and if you understand that from the very beginning, you'll find you find some, a lot of peace and happiness. If you're kind to the body, then the body relaxes with you. Have you ever been with somebody who's a real control freak and tells you what to do? Sit up straight. Stop sort of moving. So, no, stop scratching. Come on. And what does that do to you? That just makes you so tense and so afraid. And that just is part of the problem of life. Not knowing just how to relax and be you. First of all, if anyone is coming here to improve yourself, forget it. You're already good enough in my book. So when you're good enough, you allow yourself to be, instead of trying to get somewhere. How many of you are trying to get somewhere in life? And you've been trying to get there all your life. Have you arrived yet? No. That's why somebody asked me, just a few days ago, success and happiness. What's the secret of happiness and success? When I was young, I thought you have to be successful, and then you can be happy. Yes. Get your degrees, get your house, get your car, get a nice income, have money in the bank, be popular, be respected, and when you're successful, then you'll be happy. But then I found out that doesn't work that way. So many successful people, or at least people were looked upon as being successful, they were a mess. And then I heard from psychology that no, be happy first, be passionate about your job, and then success will follow automatically. And then I found that was bullshit also. And now you realize that it's not success leads to happiness, nor happiness leads to success, but happiness is success. If you're happy, if you're enjoying this moment, if you're here, that is success. That's what we're leading to in life. Happiness. So you don't actually need to be a millionaire to be happy. All you need to do is stop wanting to be a millionaire. Stop wanting to change. I should have brought this nice cartoon. I hope I didn't say this last time I was here. The cartoon about a person who went to see this monk, just like a 4 or 5 stage cartoon. And the first page of the cartoon, or first frame of the cartoon, is a very angry man coming to see the monk with a big sign, "I want happiness." And then the next part of the cartoon, the monk shaking his head and said, "First mistake, I." Too much ego. Too much, sense of me and of what I need, what I want. So he rubbed out the I. And the sign read, "Want happiness." Second mistake, wanting something different. So scrub that out too. He scrubbed out the want. So what does that leave? Happiness. I want happiness. If you scrub those two out, the I and the want, then you have happiness. So simple. Well, that was a very, very profound little cartoon. So, meditate. Do you want to develop yourself? If you want to change yourself, it's more stress. Same as going to school, same as going to work, trying to get it better, trying to improve things. And what happens? You never get there. So this is different. Meditation is stop going somewhere and being here. Stop trying to be different, but open the door of your heart to this moment. With this beautiful kindness. Be kind to your poor body. Your poor body has just been pushing it around all this time. So learn to relax the body. So the first thing in meditation is sitting comfortably. You know that, you know, sometimes have you ever seen those movies in the Zen monasteries? We have to sit down on a hard floor for hours. If you move, whack with the Zen stick. You can't do that anymore. That's called assault. Just like that poor peanut going down the road. You can't do it. And anyway, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. That's not how I learn meditation. How I learn meditation, you sit nice and comfortably, and you look at your body. How is that? Is that comfortable? You know what happens is people have all these ideas. You know, what you've been taught, what you've been told, how it should be. You look at the books. You see the movies or the download the How to Meditate books. Oh my goodness me! Don't you know how to relax instead of being told what to do? A lot of times that's a problem. We always like to be told what to do. For goodness sake, don't listen to a monk like me. And so I shouldn't listen to you. I say, you're doing what I'm telling you, so stop it. So instead, just feel your body. What's it feel like? Does it need to sort of move to the left, to the right, stretch the body, relax it, or whatever? Be mindful of your body. Now, we use the word mindfulness a lot these days. You know, when we say mindfulness, it actually started from Buddhism. I call it asset stripping. Anyway, so you look at the mindfulness, you're aware of how your body is. How does it feel? Now, once you're aware of it, the next thing is to be kind to it. It needs fixing, it needs adjusting, it needs scratching. So if it needs scratching, scratch it. If it needs to cough, cough. If you need to sneeze, sneeze. If you need to fidget, fidget. So this is like learning how to be aware of your body, be kind to it. And that means that your body relaxes. I'll go through this in a guided meditation in a few minutes. And number two, then you actually start to relax your mind. How do you relax the mind? Sometimes your body still, but then you really get into this control freak thing. Come on mind, relax. Relax. Relax! How many times have I tell you to relax? Or you get sort of all these things from the past come in your head. All these terrible things which have happened to you. All these terrible things which have happened to me. I'm so overworked, so unloved, so uncared for, poor me. Instead of doing that, you have, oh, it's wonderful, you know, to be yourself, whoever you are. So what you do is actually you allow yourself to be with kindness. And your emotional world, the past. You know, one of the problems is we always say, like, Deepak Chopra, no, not really, oh, Deepak Chopra probably says, well, Eckhart Tolle, yeah. Be now. How do you be now? He says, okay, come on, become now. And now is a goal in the future which you try and aspire for. So you never get there. And so it's like, okay, come on, just get in the present moment. That's not how it works. How it works, if you want to be free from your past, be kind to it first. All of your history, all of the trauma, all the difficulties, all the stuff, rejection, not being really heard or understood, all of that, be kind to it. And if you're kind to the past, it's beautiful compassion, opening the door of your heart to it, you know what happens? It gets all soft and fluffy instead of hard and prickly. That's what kindness, compassion does. It relaxes things. Have you ever remembered when, you know, you were young and you wanted to go to sleep and you were afraid of monsters under the bed or spiders? That was my fear. I remember now, fear when I was a kid. A big spider at the bottom of the staircase. like a huge tarantula. So what would happen? I've had a nightmare. And your mum or your dad would come in. They wouldn't tell you, shut up, go to sleep or else. That wouldn't help, would it? Instead, it's like, oh, it's okay, no stroke of your hair, tell you a little story, and you go fast asleep. The kindness is what relaxes you. So be kind to your body, also be kind to your past. Give it compassion. Past, the door of my heart's open to you. Oh, I don't know why it happened to me, but it's always, it's, you know, those who've been here before, it's all shit from my mango tree. It's always, you know, you can make something out of it. And that way, just you allow things to be. And because the past is not heavy anymore, because you're kind to it, it gets so soft it just vanishes away. The same as the future. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? But we can be kind to it, and it all vanishes away. It's through the kindness, the softness. That's how we come into the present moment, not through force. Now you learn this yourself, not just believe in me. I said don't believe what I say. Because instead, but what you do is, you look at this thing which I call the peaceometer. It's a nice little invention of, you know, how to meditate. I'm sure that someone will strip that asset away later on and market it. The peaceometer. And to do that, just how peaceful are you right now? You don't need to fake it, because no one is going to assess you or judge you or criticize you or praise you. Yeah, I'm really peaceful, I'm a mess. Just to know what it is, be honest. How peaceful or how agitated are you? And now straight away you're looking at the peaceometer, you're aware of it. How peaceful are you? Now once you have awareness in the correct place, it's, you know, pretty simple. You start learning, trial and error sometimes, how to turn that peaceometer to deeper and deeper states of peace. And what agitates you? What upsets you? You learn that. Just a little bit of trial and error. But once you learn that, you know what you'll find. I'm telling you this, but you can find it out for yourself. That control, wanting, trying to get somewhere, trying to get rid of things, that just makes you more agitated. That's what you're doing the whole of your life. Trying to improve, trying to aim for some goal, trying to achieve something. That just makes the mind just so stressed. But if instead we had this beautiful kindness, just letting be, mind, right now, the door of my heart's open to me. Whatever's happening right now, oh, it must have some meaning for me. I'll find out later on, but this is good enough. And then when you have that kindness, that letting this moment be, not judging, but accepting this moment, then you'll find the mind gets so peaceful, so calm. And then you get to learn what meditation's all about. It's not controlling, it's learning how to let things be, put them down, and your mind gets peaceful all by itself. What I learned first time I was over in Thailand, how to meditate, someone would put their hand up like this, my teacher at Gantra, and he'd wave it around like this. And he'd say, this represents a leaf on a tree. Why is it moving like this? It's only because there's a wind blowing. If the wind stops, the leaf moves less and less and less until it comes to perfect stillness. But that's its natural state, to be still. It only moves because something outside of it is making it move. The wind of wanting something. So that's the wind which makes your mind move, wanting something. And if you want something, that's what keeps the mind moving. If you don't want anything at all, this is good enough for me. Let it be. Just, no, this is, I can make use of this somehow or other. Beautiful, half an hour, I don't have to do anything. There's no exam coming afterwards. The monk is not going to criticize me or praise me. I'm not going to be judged, give me the prize. The best meditator in the whole of the Armadale group. Today's prize goes to... You don't have to strive and stress like that. Because no one's going to judge you at all. Instead, you can just be. And at last, you don't have to live up to anybody's expectations. You don't have to live up to your own expectations either. No expectations at all. Just be. You find that sort of attitude, that really calms you down. And you don't need to believe me, because you'll feel this yourself. The mind gets very peaceful, very still. Calm, so easy when you're looking at the right place. You feel what's right, and you know what's wrong. That's what mindfulness actually does. It gives you the opportunity for feedback. The feedback is negative, I'm getting more tense. You're going in the wrong direction. You're getting more calm and peaceful. Correct, go in the right direction. And don't worry if you fall asleep. Now, asleep is just a lot of you are tired, that's all. Tiredness is one of the biggest problems in our world today. We work too much. And a lot of people that, you know, you think you have to do this, people put the pressure on you all the time to achieve this and do that. My goodness, you're just so exhausted. So if you fall asleep through this meditation, fine. Let it happen. It just means you deserve it. And in fact, if you fall asleep in the meditation, at least you know how to let go. Not worry. And the time comes afterwards when you've got through your sleep deficit, and you can actually just meditate, and you get so peaceful, but awake at the same time, aware. And you really, really relax. And you know it's how it works, because afterwards you feel so good. It's really nice. And that shows you that you know the benefits of the meditation. You're relaxing the body, relaxing the mind. And you deserve it. Great for your health. Great for your peace of mind. You know, one of the most important things is that when you're really peaceful and still, you're not really thinking, all the problems, they get into perspective. The problems of your life become actually quite easy to solve when you're still. Thinking about it, worrying about it, just puts the problem further and further and further along the track. Stillness, peacefulness, kindness is not only the path, it's the solution to the problems of life. So simple. And you get it for free. Oh, it's not for free. I'm not sure if Rachel told you, but you know, this is meditation session is not for free. It is priceless. I have to say that because this person, they called up and said, how much does... Oh, yeah, here you teach meditation. Yeah. How much do you charge for your meditation classes? And I said, nothing. It's for free. You know what they said? It can't be worth anything then. That's what people say, the more you charge, the more worth it is. Totally ridiculous. But we don't say that anymore. We say, the teachings are priceless. So it's much better, isn't it? So, in other words, it's not just no value. Mm. It's such a high value, you can't put a price on it. That's why it's for free. Nice. Okay, so there we go. That's the introduction. And because we've got the air conditioner in here, for some of you it's cold and some of you it's hot. So for those of you who feel it's too cold in here, please remember Buddhist climate control. Which means if it's cold, keep a warm heart. If it's hot, keep a cool head. Does that work? Or alternatively, you can put a jacket on, a beanie on, or whatever. But anyway, I'm going to go and sit on the floor, and we can do some guided meditation, and afterwards, questions and answers, or a little talk. Actually, I'm going to give a talk today because I've got some really nice little article I read from the internet on perfectionism. And all the problems it causes you. Okie dokie, here we go. Okay. So, sit down, close your eyes. I say, when everyone's got their eyes closed, now you can pick your nose, put your finger in your ear,
laughter. No one's watching. You don't feel embarrassed or ashamed. It's okay. What's wrong with that? You've got an itchy nose. And sometimes you wonder what's the point of having a little finger. It's precisely it just fits right in here. It's made for it. But somehow or other we're not supposed to do it. Okay. So, sitting down. Now, have a look at your posture. Now, don't go through theory, go through experience. Feel your body. Now, you can start with your legs. Great way of arousing mindfulness, getting it started. Ask your legs as if they were independent from you, like they're a separate being. Legs, how are you? Do you need adjusting or scratching or whatever? Because when you ask a question like that, straight away your awareness goes to that part, and it's like the legs give you the answer. Yeah, you know, I just need my right big toe is just a bit squashed, so I'm going to move it just to. So asking a question, just, you know, like you ask somebody, you feeling okay? At least, you know, they may not give you a verbal answer, but, you know, you're looking at that part of them and you can actually understand, yeah, they're okay, they're a bit sort of upset. You know, their body language will actually tell you, but if you don't ask a question, it means you're not looking in the right place. And if your legs need adjusting, please do so out of kindness. And then your bottom. The bottom takes a lot of weight. That's why today I just messed up the meditation with a little joke. This is actually true. Because, you know, I'm getting really busy and a lot of people decided I need an assistant, like a PA at the monastery to help with some of the work. And so we got him a new email, the email address. And so I wanted to have his email address is Brahms Ass. You know, for Brahms assistant. That caused a lot of Brahms Ass, because there is this matter, because my bottom has to support the rest of my body, so that's what Brahms Ass has to do, support me. I don't think it's going to pass the committee though. Anyway, nice thought. Anyway, just your bottom, it supports the whole of your weight, so just fidget it, make sure it's comfortable. For me, it's making sure it's just the right place on the cushion. And then your back. You've heard me just on the guided meditation. I just get in the habit, I love this, just to stretch the back. Stretch it. And you get all these wonderful endorphins just going there. That's why you see kangaroos and cats and dogs, they all like stretching. So yeah, a good stretch. Oh, that feels good. Once I stretch the back, and then I just relax it. Just ask back, how are you? Anything you need? Oh, is the waist okay? So when you're sitting on a chair, you can lean back if you want, you can lean forward, you can lean the left, the right. You find the best position for you. Just got your eyes closed, doesn't matter what you're doing, no one else is looking. You just find the best position for your own body. Then your hands, where you put your hands when you meditate, can be wherever they feel comfortable. So you can experiment. Just put your hands on your knees, your hands on your lap, fold your arms, whatever works. Because once you're aware of how it feels, it gives you the feedback so you can find the optimum position, the best position for you today in this room. It's not always the same everywhere. Every time. Then you relax your shoulders. One way of relaxing the shoulders is, now it's a bit perverse, but it works. Tense them up first of all. Tense them up as tight as you can possibly go, and then you release them. And then you become actually more relaxed than when you started. It's like it just sort of falls down to a really relaxed position. You can feel. I feel my shoulders. Just let them go. I'm not pulling or pushing or squashing them. Everything is nice and loose. Then my neck on my head, making sure the neck is just nice and relaxed. Then your head itself, try more forward, more back, what feels the best? And also just the muscles in the face. Nicely relaxed, because those facial muscles, they tell a lot about your fears, anxieties, things which worry you. If your face is really relaxed, then it actually affects the mind. The mind is just really happy being here. So you feel muscles around the eyes. For me, that's why I really look in my face and I relax them. You can feel them, and I learn from the feedback which mindfulness gives me of just learning how to let them go. Be relaxed. As loose as my monk's robes. So no tension anywhere. And I've got my whole body just nicely relaxed. I look at it as one unit now. Checking, body, how are you? And if there's any irritation or pain or disturbance anywhere, I just go to that. Today, there's slight irritation in my throat, just the remnants of hay fever. I'm just aware of it, zoom in on it. Quite sure, mind, you may have a tummy ache, you may have an ache in your back or your butt or somewhere. Could be an injury, could be also emotional stuff kept in your body. So feel that part of the body which does really need TLC, tender loving care. Acknowledge, be there for that part of the body which is really needs your attention and kindness. And as soon as I'm aware of that part of the body, I have the opportunity of getting feedback. Try this. By that. What relaxes it? And this is something I can feel directly. Irritation in my throat. I can just relax my throat. Be kind, not be afraid or worried. Feel totally safe at peace. So bye. You know the irritation gets less. I feel that. And this is how I focus on one part of my body, the part which needs the most attention, and relax it to the max. Such a great skill to perfect, to develop. Looking at any part of the body and relaxing it. I get to the point where my body feels it's really nice. It sort of tingles. Just like the feeling you may get, you wake up in the morning having had a really good sleep. And it's a Sunday, you don't have to do anything. You can just stay in bed. Just nice and cozy and warm. That sort of cozy, warm, so bye feeling when you learn how to relax the body with mindfulness and kindness. I go to my mind, my emotional world, and I ask myself, how peaceful am I right now? How content? How at ease? Well, how agitated am I? And I usually ask you to give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 means really peaceful, and 10 means really agitated. All that means is you are looking at the right spot in your emotional garden. How peaceful, how agitated are you? And once you're mindful of that, you're aware of that, now, what makes that needle on your piezometer go further down to 1? What irritates it? Your mind just being obsessed with the past or the future just really irritates the piezometer. It just moves it up to 9 or 10. Or trying to get rid of the past, or trying to suppress the future, also moves the needle up. If you say, past, future, door of my heart is open to you, you're part of life also. You're beautiful, kind. You find it's not how you're feeling or what you're remembering, is how you react to it. That's what causes the irritation. So one learns how to let things be. And you come into the present moment naturally. The past is not important when you're kind to it. The future is safe when you know you have compassion. The present moment, when you're kind to the present moment, it's like it becomes your best friend in the whole world. You don't need to hold it. You just enjoy each other's company. Just being here, being now. What I call being nowhere. Nowhere is a word which is a combination of now and here. I was in a crossword puzzle the other day. Being now, being here. Nowhere. So, getting nowhere is getting now, getting here. Just being. No judging, just being. Awareness of the breathing happens to come in, which it does quite naturally, especially for those who've been meditating a long time. The breath comes in, just welcome it, it's your friend. Breath goes out, very nice. Treat it as a friend, a good companion who you can hang out with. An idea of friendship, kindness, letting things be. That is what allows you to settle in this moment with simple things. Simple pleasure of just being with your breath. The mindfulness is always noticing what calms you down and what agitates. Mind happens to go off into a path. Be kind to that mind. It'll come back by itself. Don't try to achieve anything. That's not kindness. Just be here. Nothing pulling you or pushing you. Peace coming from kindness. Be quiet for 5 or 10 minutes now, until the end of the meditation, 5 minutes. When I start speaking again, you'll need to wind up the meditation.
coming to the end of the meditation period now. How do you feel? How sublime is your body? How peaceful is your mind? And what does peace feel like? So delightful, so joyful. So I've got to ring the gong now.
Does anyone else want me to do anything else other than we'll talk about? Because I've got this, people send me these really nice emails every now and again. Most of them are jokes. Some of them I can't repeat here. But there's also some nice interesting stuff which happens. The one today is just about, you know, people's idea of being a perfectionist and why, where that comes from. And you know, the antidote to it, but also what happens when you do become a perfectionist, that's where a lot of people get anxiety, depression, and even suicide. It's one of the reasons why. Have you ever seen that sometimes people say, how can people actually do that? They're so successful in life, they've got so much, they're doing so well. But you know why? It is because, you know, such people, they're just working so hard, but they're still never happy and content. It's just like that old story about, you know, how much money do you need? You just think that someone like a Bill Gates or a Warren Buffett would just retire and relax. What do they want all that trouble for? You know, why does, you know, like a Turnbull or a Trump, why do they have to take all that problems for? You know, if you had that much money, wouldn't you just relax and get a nice boat somewhere and just go sailing? Or, well, why do people want to do all this stuff? And the point is, we always want more, which is one of the biggest problems of our life. We always think that we're not good enough, however much you have. And that, you know, trying to be good enough, where does that come from? Why do people always try to improve themselves or get more, be better? It always comes from this idea that, now, if we aren't good enough, we get rejected, that we get pushed out, that no one loves us, no one cares for us, that we are a failure. And it's really amazing to see just how many people on the outside, they're so beautiful, they're so successful, they've got such amazing talents, you know, whether it's on the football field or on the TV. So, and they inside, they strive so much to be better. So isn't that good enough? And that is some of our things which we've learned when we were very, very young, from, you know, our parents, from our teachers. You're never good enough. And from that time on, we're always feeling that there's something wrong with us, that somehow or other, when they gave out sort of noses, or they gave up brains which can tell jokes, well, I got the worst one of those things, and so I always have to tell stupid, terrible jokes in life. Oh, whatever. It's okay, I won't tell another bad joke. I said that, smiling now, good. So I thought that was the introduction to another terrible joke. But they always think, there's probably one coming soon, but not quite immediately. So they always feel that, you know, we're not good enough. You know, even like telling jokes, that's the whole problem. You, people tell these wonderful jokes, and just sometimes they try and repeat them, but because they're so afraid and so tense up in case they fail, that's why they sort of mess up the jokes, mess up the punchlines. What's one of my favourite jokes now? About the carrot joke? Mm. You know the carrot joke? Two carrots were walking down Armadale Jowl Street. They're walking down Jowl Street, minding their own business, and a car, you know, drunk driver, lost control, and they hit one of those carrots. And the other carrot got out the cell phone straight away, rang 000, and a car from, you know, Armadale Hospital here, they came to us within seconds. They took one look at the injured carrot and said, "This is serious." So put him in the back. And the other carrot, his best friend, just went with him to the hospital, went in the emergency department, and went through the triage, and took one look at the injured carrot and said, "This is serious. Immediate surgery." So they wheeled him into surgery while the other carrot, you know, was in the waiting room. I don't know if you've ever been in those waiting rooms of hospitals, emergency departments, so tense. This is life and death. You know, your best friend is, you know, just on the edge. So the carrot, you know, who was waiting for his best friend in surgery, was just so tense and so sort of worried all the time. After 2 hours, the surgeon finally came out, and he said, "Are you the friend of Mr. Carrot?" It's a bit of a giveaway, but yes, that's me. You don't see many carrots in the emergency room of Armadale Hospital, but so yeah. He said, "I've got some good news and bad news for you, Mr. Carrot." So what's that? He said, "The good news is your friend. We managed to save his life. It was touch and go for a while, but we managed to, he's going to survive. And the bad news is, because of his injuries, he's going to be a vegetable for the rest of his life." That's such a bad joke. That guy was a bit sketchy. Okay. Anyway, I've got to calm down now. Well, I'll tell you, it's trying to be a perfectionist. It's just so tense. What are you doing that for? And it's always to try and get sort of acceptance in life. Trying to actually to be popular. But you know, a lot of times that just makes you just, that's a problem, is trying too hard. I even learned that when I was a kid, you know, when I was about 10 years of age, I got a bike, and as soon as I got a bike, I was so afraid of falling off. Remember the first time you rode a bicycle? So afraid of falling off, I grabbed the handlebars until my knuckles went white, and I was so stiff that when I went around the corners, I fell off. You know, you didn't balance with the bike. You didn't allow the body to adjust as the bike was moving. You're so stiff because of fear. And later on in life, obviously, you just learn not to be afraid. And then you just go. My mother was afraid, seeing the way I was riding my bike. But myself, you just rode and never fell off because you were relaxed. That's the same about life, being relaxed. You find you don't fall off of life. Don't worry what other people think of you. These days, people are so busy. Are you busy? They're so busy that they've got no time to think about you. So actually you can do whatever you like. Isn't that wonderful? You don't have to please people anymore. And that means you can relax. That takes a lot of pressure off you. And it means actually your health improves. You don't get so upset. Yeah, things happen which, you know, don't go your way. But you allow it to be. Which is a wonderful. No, I got an email this afternoon from this. I did a celebrity marriage 7 years ago, and there was this TV star in Malaysia, Sandria, and she was had her own TV show in Malaysia, and she was she listens to my talks, and she said, "I'll be wonderful when I get married. If I can get Ajahn Brahm to be, then you know how busy I am. You just can't just that tell me that to please come. It just happened. It's the stars were in alignment. I was going to be there in Malacca exactly the day that she was getting married. So, you know, it's only an hour to do a little service for her and just really impressed her. And that was when that I got my mugshot in Hello magazine, Southeast Asia. It was Hello, a new idea, or Women's Bar, or you know, with a celebrity wedding. It was really good fun. But you know, she's really into some of my stuff, and so she moved from TV into the internet, because that's where the action is these days, in Facebooks and stuff. She told me that, you know, one of the little blogs she did on one of my stories, you know, it's gone viral, 55 million views. That's a lot of people viewing. And that was the story of the good, bad, who knows. And the reason I've done that story many times, the reason why her one went viral and got more views than when I tell the story, is because, you know, she's young and attractive. And maybe I'm a bit past it. But nevertheless, I try my best. So that story, but that actually saves a lot of people's lives. The good, bad, who knows. So here comes the good, bad, who knows story, which is about perfection. So there was a king many years ago, and he loved going hunting. And of course, being a king, go with your entourage. You know, your other soldiers and guards, and of course his doctor was with him. And so as he was going on the hunt, he wounded his finger. He cut it. So call the doctor over. Doctor, have a look at this. And the doctor took one look at the finger and said, that's no problem. Put a band-aid on it. She'll be right, mate. So, well, whatever they say in that kingdom. So off they went, carried on hunting. When he got back to the palace, the king had to call the doctor over to him again. Said, look at this. You know, it's been infected. And so, oh yeah, I have to clean that up. And so he cleaned it up, you know, and just put a proper bandage on it. And the king says, is it going to be okay now? And the doctor said, good, bad, who knows? Now, if ever you've gone to see a doctor and they say that, good, bad, who knows, is that very reassuring? Of course, it's much more reassuring if they say oops. If you're a doctor, especially when you're doing surgery, if you hear them say oops, you're in big trouble. But anyway, yeah, okay, so good, bad, who knows. So the king just dismissed the doctor, but a few days later had to call the doctor over again, because this time the whole thing was black and really infected. And the doctor said, oh, I'm sorry, but I have to cut that off, amputate it. And the king was really upset. So upset, as soon as the operation was over, he said, you're an incompetent doctor. You know, you should know how to look after wounds. So he threw him in the dungeon and locked the door of the cell himself, the king did. And he looked at the doctor, what do you think now of being in jail, you stupid doctor? And the doctor said, being in prison, good, bad, who knows? He said, you're not only incompetent, you're insane. And so after a few days, a few weeks, when the wound has healed, the king was out there hunting again. And this time he was out there hunting in the forest, chasing some sort of poor little animal. And about animals, that apparently every once a month we do a kitchen clean-up at Bodhidharma Monastery. And there's four mice in there now. And I say, why don't you catch them? Well, one of the mice is so big, apparently, you know, it's stuffing itself with monastery food, that, you know, they saw it, they put a little trap out for it, and a Buddhist trap doesn't kill it. And they couldn't actually get in the trap, it was too fat to get in. That only happens in a Buddhist monastery, the mice are too fat to get in the trap. Hopeless. Anyway, back to the king. He was chasing some animal, and went so fast, the rest couldn't keep up with him, and so he got separated from all his guards and entourage, and he got lost. The days without GPS. He got lost. In the forest, in the jungle. And the more he tried to find his way home, the deeper he went into the jungle, more and more lost, until he got captured by the indigenous tribes. And it just happened to be the holiest day of their year, when they would, according to tradition, do a sacrifice. Now, usually it would be a human sacrifice, a animal sacrifice, but now they had a human. Not only any human, a king, royalty. Wow, that would be such good luck to sacrifice such an important person to their gods. So they were really excited, and they tied the king to a tree, and then they started doing the ceremony to sacrifice to their god. They started dancing around, and the drummer started to beat boom 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 boom, and the singer started to chant ooh ooh ah ah ooh ah ah ooh ah ah ooh ah ah ah. They're getting louder and louder, more excited. They started jumping, and the priest got out the knife to cut the king's head off, and then he said, "Stop! Stop! We can't sacrifice him. He's not perfect. He's missing a finger." It was right. By the way, I do that sort of dramatic stuff just because I can be quite boring as a monk sometimes, so you know, I just over exaggerate sometimes. It's good fun. There it was, and he's not perfect enough, because if ever you, like, you know, it's Christmas time now, if you're giving a gift to your mother-in-law or something, it has to be perfect. What was that English comedian who used to say that he'd always invite his mother-in-law over for Christmas? Every year for years he'd always invite his mother-in-law. No, that's right, his mother-in-law would always come to his house every Christmas for years. And last year he made an exception. He let her in. So who was that?
Les Dawson,
that's right, yeah. It's crazy. But anyway, you know why mother-in-law? I don't know why people don't like mothers-in-law, but if you do actually rearrange the letters of their name, mother-in-law, re-spell it, you know what it spells? It spells Hitler woman. Why? What do you think of mother-in-law, you re-spell it, and it's Hitler woman. Anyway, I better not go there, I'll probably get into more trouble soon, because many of you are mothers-in-law. I don't know why fathers-in-law not get the stick for that. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, going back to the not perfect enough. So because of that, because if, for example, if you come to the Buddhist monastery or the nunnery at Gijikana and you make something for us to eat, doesn't it have to be perfect? Otherwise you say, no, it's bad karma, bad luck if you don't get something perfect. Is that the case? I hope it is.
A little bit hope, yeah.
But anyway, so they had to release the king, because it wasn't perfect. It would be bad luck to sacrifice a king, you know, without a finger, imperfect. So what they did, they said, well, you know, we can, no, no reason for you being here anymore, so we'll guide you back to the palace. So they guided him back, and as soon as he got back to the palace, you know the first thing he did? Go to the dungeon to apologize to the doctor. And he said, you know, I thought it was such an unlucky thing to lose my finger, such a bad thing, but you know, I was wrong. Losing a finger saved my life. If I hadn't lost that finger, I'd be dead. Thank you so much, you wise doctor, and I apologize, it's a bad thing I did putting you in prison. And the doctor said, what do you mean a bad thing? Didn't I tell you, good, bad, who knows, being in jail? How could it be good being in jail, said the king. Well, said the doctor, if I hadn't been in jail, I'd have been with you on that hunt. I'd have been captured. And the moral of that story is, you always think, oh, why did this happen to me? Oh, it's terrible. But you know, in the end, sometimes these things do have meaning. Somewhere down the track, and actually you find, well, was it such a bad thing after all? Was it a good thing? What happens is good, bad, who knows? What that does, it means you don't have to have a perfect life. In fact, well, it is really perfect if you understand what perfection is, which means you don't have to worry about a thing, which means no worries, mate. Now that's a little story. It actually went viral, 55 million views. about good, bad, who knows, to stop a lot of problems in our life. Sometimes you know that there is difficulties in life. You know, I remember, I don't know if you remember this, Rachel, in your history lessons in England, we used to talk about the Great Fire of London. And that Great Fire of London just destroyed so many sort of properties in central London. But that allowed just the architects and the planners to go a clean slate and just rebuild, you know, London as it is today, but also to put the sewage system in there, which wasn't in there before, which is why they got all those plays and stuff. And so what was a disaster turned into some wonderful things which happened in life. And as for me, one of the disasters of my life, which I thought was a disaster at the time, but which changed my whole life for the better. I was only 19 years of age when I fell in love for the first time. We had such a beautiful 6 months together, a wonderful time. You know what happened? She dumped me for another guy. Ah, oh, such a but you know now, I look back upon that and think, thank you so much. Oh, I'm so lucky. Good, bad, who knows? At the time, you might, that's actually why I became a monk. People ask me that, why did you become a monk? I became a monk to forget. Well, it's actually, I exaggerated that story a bit. But it works, doesn't it? Because, you know, she's forgotten. So, anyway, but people don't like that idea. Came in mind to forget. Actually, you know why Ajahn Chah became? My teacher became a monk. He told me this story. I don't know if you know this story. But when they were in villages in Thailand, you know, like kids in the old days didn't have sort of games or TVs. They used to play games in the street. You know, and so they used to play not house, they used to play monk. You know, and so little Ajahn Chah, 6 or 7 years of age kid, he decided, you know, that he would always volunteer to be the monk, you know, in the game. And as a monk, all he did was sit down, and all his friends would go to the house and get him sweets and get him things to eat. He didn't have to do any work, he just sat there and ate all day. And he thought, oh, that's what I wanted to do when I grow up. No stress. I remember telling that story. He was a joker too. Gorgeous, yeah. So that's what turned him into becoming a monk. Because I saw that down there. You got a note there. Anyone want to become a monk?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what that means anyway.
Uphill.
Okay, but afterwards. But anyway, if ever you know you do want to become a monk, there are some requirements for becoming a monk. First of all, you have to be. This is why today, when somebody asks who's coming to Armadale Group tonight, who took the phone call?
Marlene.
And what did you hear?
You want me to tell them what
yourself?
Ajahn's suicide belt.
You know where that came from? Because when I was travelling in the United States, you know, so what you got under your robe? They thought it was a suicide, because you can imagine you can put one under here with a rope. And I said, no, it's not a suicide belt, it's just fat. And so Ajahn Appy, who was really concerned about my health, said, well, it is a suicide belt. Ajahn's suicide belt. That was a big bit of funny days. It's really important. But anyway, very good.
I thought you were going to tell your wigwam joke.
I thought it was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
You weren't here 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago? Yeah, well, I think I said it was somewhere. I was here, you weren't here, that's the problem. I was in somewhere else.
I haven't missed it.
Okay, I can. I will prove that this is something new. I will prove that you're not here.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Rachel, are you in London?
Yes, I'm everywhere.
No, I can't. It's not playing fair. Okay, I'll try Doug. Doug, are you in London?
No.
Okay, are you in New York?
No.
Are you in Singapore?
No.
So if you're not in London, you're not in New York, you're not in Singapore, you must be somewhere else, correct?
Correct.
And if you're somewhere else, you can't be here. True. You try that on your kids at Christmas time. Bring them to church. Maybe your kid is not here. But anyway, you want the wigwam joke? Okay, you mentioned it now. This is actually part of meditation, so tell us a lot of meditation. Guy goes to a psychiatrist. You need your head exam to go and see a psychiatrist. That's what Adolf Hirst said that. Anyone who goes to see a psychiatrist needs a head exam. I thought it was funny anyway. That's why psychiatrist jokes about the squirrel. I think I told that last time.
You told that last
time. Okay, you got a good memory. I can forget that sometimes. Okay, so if you didn't hear that one, Will goes to the psychiatrist's office. What are you doing here? Says the psychiatrist. Well, as soon as I heard you are what you eat, I realised I was nuts. Scribble. Okay, the wigwam. So a guy goes to the psychiatrist and says, you know, I've got these delusions. Sometimes I think I'm a wigwam. The other time I think I'm a marquee. And the doctor said, that's very common these days. You're just too tense. Yeah, girl. The guy goes to the psychiatrist. You've got to be going now. And says, I think I'm a doc. And the psychiatrist says, get on the couch. No, I'm not allowed. Okay. You encourage me, sir. Oh, I take no responsibility. Okay. Okay, there we go.
Got a minute left.
Okay, a nice quick minute joke.
You don't have to. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you under pressure.
Yeah, under pressure. I like being under pressure. Stress is my middle name.
Other me.
Sorry?
Your other me.
Other Donut. I said Donut, that's my other name. Because somebody gave me that name. I said Donut. And I think that's quite good at a retreat, because the reason they called me Donut is because I'm round, that I'm holy, and I'm sweet.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay, a really terrible Christmas joke now, so you encourage me. Christmas joke. If there's any Catholics here, please leave the room now. About a really, really, really naughty kid. Really bad, about 10 years of age. And he said to his mum, you know what I want for Christmas? I want a nice red bicycle. His mum said, well, you look, you've been a really naughty kid. You know, it's very unlikely that Father Christmas is going to get you a bicycle for Christmas. He said, he said, well, no, why don't you sort of do something good? So he said, oh, I'll go and I'll write a letter to Jesus asking for a bicycle. And so he wrote this really penitentiary letter saying, I'm terribly sorry. I'm just boys being boys, but you know, I promise I won't do any bad again if you give me a bicycle. And then he read it to himself and said, that's not going to work. So, you know, I'm sure that Jesus can see right through that. So he decided to try in another way. So he had told his mum, said, is it okay if I go to church for a few minutes? And his mother was really surprised. What's that? I said about the bicycle. Oh, yes, very good, son. You go to church. Good thing to do. So he goes into the church where no one is looking. He nicks one of the statues of Virgin Mary. He pinches it, steals it. He puts it under his jumper and walks out. And then he goes out to his bedroom without telling his mother. And then he writes a letter to Jesus. Jesus, I've got your mum. If you want to see her again, send me a bicycle. I apologize. It's a Christmas joke.